everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Connecting Women in Insurance with me, your host, Julie. If you haven't already, please like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We're going to jump right in today, and I am so thrilled to introduce Ms. Erica Duda, who is the founder and CEO of InsureQuest Training and Develop. Thank you for joining me today, Erica.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you do there at InsureQuest and kind of your day-to-day.
Sure. So, like you said, I am the founder of InsureQuest Training and Development. What we do is partner with small to medium-sized organizations that need training support. So a lot of our clients are those that are scaling quickly and need to catch their training up to what their current growth is. So day-to-day would be anything from working with clients to, you know, develop any sort of their internal guidelines to posting on social media, because that's a lot of what I do right now as well, to working with our group here to develop courses for our clients, and just a little bit of everything. And I think that's something that starting a business, you don't realize that you have your hands in absolutely everything. And things that you may not have had any experience in, such as business development or sales, you are now thrust into that. And so that's, it's literally every single, you know, part of the organization I have a hand on. And it's interesting. It's definitely different every single day, but, and it's challenging, but it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Okay. So you do training and development now, but what made you decide on a career in insurance? Did you start out that way or how did you get to this point? Where did you begin?
Insurance, much like I think everyone, or I don't want to say everyone because there are people that actually go to school for risk management.
Right.
I found a job that looked cool. And it was, you know, it was a total loss appraiser for Mercury Insurance. And I'm like, you know, it sounded really interesting. So I applied and really enjoyed the process, enjoyed, you know, evaluating and, you know, negotiating and kind of putting together the pieces. So that's what led me to really stay with insurance.
Okay.
I was very, very fortunate to be recruited, and I will always thank Cindy Tolka for finding me. And she recruited me over to Progressive a few years into my tenure, where I really was able to grow and develop, not only as a claims adjuster, but as a leader. So I held a number of positions at Progressive, where I started as a claims generalist, and really it was end-to-end handling, moved into management roles, where I oversaw, you know, a team of 5 to 7 adjusters, really developed those leadership skills, you know, giving feedback, going through the whole QA process, developing QA checklists for our team, and then moving into a process development role, which I absolutely loved. And I was on a team that worked on at the time, they were revamping the drive-in process nationwide.
Okay.
So they were trying to figure out how to create the best customer experience for this drive-in situation. So we were able to analyze data, visit shops, and put together our recommendations for which shops work best, what the process should be, and that ended up being rolled out nationwide. So that was really, really fun to be a part of.
I bet.
Then unfortunately, 2008 happened. And I think like a lot of people listening to this experienced a little bit of a downfall, and I was laid off from that position. And so from there, I pivoted and worked for a couple of different companies before moving over into the IA space. And that was really, really eye-opening. Because before working for carriers, it's very much like you are, you know, in the zone kind of thing. You're in your cubicle. You see the development path within that organization. But moving into, I worked for SEA Appraisal for a while, and to see how many different vendors were out there and how many different roles outside of just being a claims adjuster really opened my eyes. And I'm like, okay, so I can do more than just claims. So I moved into, and I did IA work for a while through a couple of different firms. I was a part of the big merger State Farm project where they moved everyone from regional to zone. And I did that for a number of years.
Nice.
And what really struck me about the IA world versus the carrier world was the difference in training.
Ah.
On the carrier side, every position, I would be sent to this amazing training university. You'd sit down, you'd get 3 weeks of onboarding, support, learn the policy, learn the process. You would come, you'd walk away from that in really good shape to handle your work. On the independent side, you're thrown into stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're lucky if you get a day or two. Most of the time, most of the assignments, it's you get a day and a stack of PDFs.
There you go.
At least that's what it was at the time. we've gotten better as an industry in some aspects. But there's still a need.
Right.
So being in the IA space for a while, I did end up partnering with a TPA and an IA firm and had the opportunity to be their trainer and essentially built their training program from the ground up.
Nice.
So we were able to successfully create a training program for that organization to help not only the internal staff that they were bringing in as W-2s, but also align the 1099s with the processes that they needed to in order to successfully deliver to their clients that they needed to. So after doing that, it's something that I am extremely passionate about, and I was very successful at. So I launched into InsureQuest, and that IA firm actually became my very first client. So obviously I was still doing a good job for them. And I've been doing this ever since for the last year and a half or so.
Awesome. Awesome. So we talked beforehand, but in training, because I do that some too.
Yeah.
What do you think is probably the biggest misconception about training people, or what people think training should look like?
So I think a lot of people think training is, let's get everyone into a room and show them a bunch of PowerPoints. Mm-hmm. And if they sit there for an hour and if they look at these PowerPoints, then they're ready to go. And let's good to go. But if you take a look at the data, if you take a look at the forgetting curve, you know, within like an hour of leaving a training program, you lose something like 40% of what you've learned. So without reinforcing that material, you've essentially wasted that hour. And so I think that's the first big one. I think the second big conversation I have with, particularly with IA firms, mm-hmm. is why should I train 1099 adjusters? And the answer that I provide is you're not necessarily training on those core values. If you're an independent adjuster, and this is my soapbox, but if you're an independent adjuster and if you're getting paid to be that role, you should come in with a certain set of skills.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But every adjuster does not have the same set of experienced skills. So you have to align that experience with what your process is and what the client's expectations are. And I think that's where a lot of firms get lost, where mm-hmm. they think like, okay, I'll bring in experienced people. I see it all the time. They're like, you know, 3 to 5 years experience. Well, what does 5 years experience mean? Five years, someone, you know, doing just cats, you know, maybe doing one or two storms is not going to be the same level of experience as 5 years running daily claims, being able to see all these different CO, you know, cause of losses and really understand that.
I agree. So. And I very much am not a PowerPoint person. Like,
I don't think anyone is.
No, but when I first started, like, helping out with training here, and I did a PowerPoint, I forgot to change the slides. Like, I'm literally not a PowerPoint person. And they would be like, Julie? And I'm like, oh, crap. Click, 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 you know, because I would get lost in the teaching or the everybody stand up and let's try this, because mm-hmm. it's, I think if you sit, I had a preacher one time say, you know, the mind can only endure what the seat can stand, you know, and it's true. You can only sit so long and then you quit, you zone out. So I love that you are not PowerPoint focused.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and with when you look at, you know, how people learn best and how they best retain information, it's really being able to capture visually, audibly, and also if you can apply it kinesthetically, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to the level of retention is going to increase. And so you're going to get that much more out of that investment in training.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. So in all your years of experience, because you've had a lot of years of experience in different aspects of the mm-hmm. insurance industry, which I think is one reason your program is so well-rounded. But did you ever, like, make a decision or a mistake and you thought, I'm done, I have to start over, I'm fired, oh, well, but you learned a really valuable lesson that helped you later in your career or you were able to use to help someone else?
So I've had a couple of mistakes.
just one or two.
Look, and if we had a couple glasses of wine and there was, you know, a different podcast, we might get into some messier ones. But I have one in particular that isn't necessarily claims related.
That's
but
fun.
I think it's a really good lesson. Okay. So in starting this business, mm-hmm. and again, going back to, there's a lot of things with what I do now that I've never touched before. Mm-hmm. Sales, business development, going out and being like, hi, America, like, work with me. Like, this was all so foreign to me. And I'm introverted as heck. And so walking into like a conference, like the first time I did, I nearly had a panic attack. I had someone in my life mm-hmm. who was an experienced entrepreneur. And okay. so I leaned very heavily on him. And he kind of took the role of mentor and helped me through a couple of things. But I found that I was listening to him more than I was listening to my own instincts.
Ah.
And there were things that he recommended that I ended up doing that were mistakes mm-hmm. because I didn't listen to myself. And so I think the biggest thing from that, and then it turns out a lot of what he had shared was actually a it wasn't a, it was a he overinflated his knowledge.
Got it.
Which was like, okay. So this person that I've known for years was like, oh, okay, well, he's really not as knowledgeable as he's saying, but didn't want to tell me that because it was, you know, inflating his own ego. And it was just such a lesson in, I'm actually a lot more capable than I thought I was. And I put too much emphasis on someone that I thought was smarter than me, but in reality wasn't. So that was one of my bigger ones recently.
I love that. And I'm a huge, huge believer in follow your gut. Go with your gut. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what anybody else is telling you. And if everybody is like, you're just so wrong, but you know in your gut you've got to do it a certain way, you just do it that way, because you're going to, the decision's yours ultimately, and you're going to reap the consequences, good or bad. So, you know, it's on you, but I think you need to absolutely follow your gut always. I love that.
It's my business. It's my name. It's my reputation. And it's like, you can outsource certain things, but don't ever outsource your intuition. And that's
love it.
I
love that statement. That's awesome. Okay. So who was or is the most influential person in your career and life, and why?
So I hate the word, I hate the most, because it's always like this, okay, well, is it the most? So I'm going to say someone that is influential.
Okay.
So I've got, I'm going back and forth with personal or professional.
You can do both. We've got time.
I got time. So professional, I'd have to give it to my very first manager, David Kim. And he was the one that hired me in Progressive. So I always give him kudos and thank him for that opportunity. But when I was promoted to a lead, he gave me a book on servant leadership.
Nice.
And in the inside, he signed it. And he said, win over their hearts, and then you will have everything else. And I think that was such important advice. And that's the type of leader that he was. He led with his heart, and you genuinely knew that he cared, and he would do anything possible to make sure that you were taken care of. Progressive also did an amazing job, because they were very work environment centric, where one of the measures of the manager was actually a work environment survey that would be sent out every quarter. So if the employees weren't happy, the manager didn't get their raise.
Ah.
So it created this actual 360 feedback loop with, I don't want to say consequences, because that sounds negative, but with consequences. So it was on the line. So people genuinely leaned into making sure work environment was important. And that carried with me throughout my entire career. My thesis in grad school was on workplace initiatives and generational differences, and how, you know, they affect, different generations in the workplace. And so it's something that I've always been passionate and fascinated with. So got to give it up to David. And then I've got to put my mom in there too, because I wouldn't be anywhere without my mom. And so right now I'm reading a book called Pay Yourself First,
right?
I think it's Kelly Haig, I think it's the name. Aaron Haig.
Okay.
And I'm 9 chapters into it. It was recommended to me by someone that I deeply respect. She just started a consultancy firm. She's like, Erica, read this. This is going to help with your pricing. Like this, read this book. So I'm 9 chapters into it, and it's been 9 chapters of, you can do math. Women are just as good at math as men. And it's an important message. And obviously it's a message that people need to hear. But every time I hear it, I'm like, well, yeah, I can do math. Well, of course I can do math. I can handle it just as much as a man. And I have to thank my mom for that, because there was never a question of, can you handle this? It was always, you can handle anything. Mm-hmm. You don't need anyone in your life. You can do it all. You know, you just have to figure out the tools and the processes,
right.
But you don't need anyone.
Right.
So
I like that. Moms can be our biggest cheerleaders.
Yeah, they really can. And I'm very, very fortunate to have one that is.
Myself. I love that. Okay. So you kind of already done this, but you may have another piece of advice, but what advice would you give women listening today who want to move forward in their careers, no matter what industry?
So I think the best advice I would give is take control of your own promotion and your own future. Mm-hmm. While I can do everything, I also grew up with, you just need to work hard and keep your head down and then someone will notice you. Mm-hmm. They don't notice you. If you are not your own advocate, and if you don't put yourself out there and show what you want, say what you want, ask questions, other people who are probably not as competent as you will get further ahead. And I've seen that more and more in my career. So take charge of your career. You know, don't be afraid to stand out, ask the questions, tell people what their goals are. If you have a manager that's not doing one-on-ones with you, request the one-on-one. Like, don't leave it to them to do it. Take charge of that process.
Okay. That is good advice. I like that. Okay. So we're going to switch gears a little bit here. But before we do, I want to go back to, it's just kind of stuck with me and I forgot to ask, but when we were talking about the no PowerPoints, okay, mm-hmm. Can you give me an example and explain, like, maybe a class you do or something you do and what it entails and how, maybe how you would go about teaching it, or do you bring people in? Is there a place you go to? Like, we have a training house mm-hmm. that we'll take adjusters to. Or whatever. So, I mean, yeah. I'm curious about that, and I apologize for not asking sooner, but I am curious about how you go about it and, like, if I were to come to you for training.
Mm-hmm. So, currently, we partner directly with companies.
Right.
So, it's really what their needs are. The majority of what we've done has been either online mm-hmm. through, like, you know, through like workshops like this or through e-learning services.
Okay.
So for example, I had a client that wanted an e-learning library created.
Okay.
So we created their LMS from the ground up essentially. So those two things, but certainly if there's someone that needs something live.
Right.
To them.
So if I took one of your classes, how would online, how would you make that interactive for me? So that, like, say I'm, yeah, tell me how it would interact.
So a lot of interaction comes, at least how we do it, through storytelling.
Okay.
And through utilization of the different types of like kinesthetic things within like an LMS. There are the things such as, like, you know, the click to continue, mm-hmm. Stuff like that, where you're actually making choices. But if you don't link that to a story, it just becomes you're clicking through stuff.
Right.
So we really try to rely heavily on storytelling, on going through making decisions.
Oh, I like that.
You know, watching videos. So it kind of breaks up the information into like kind of bite-sized chunks.
Oh, I like that.
So it's not just a straight.
Right. Not just a straight online. Read and answer. Oh, yeah, I like that.
No one likes taking those courses. And
no.
And it is a bit of a challenge for e-learning to bring in that element of how do you make it interactive? How do you make mm-hmm. it fun? And you, there's certainly those ways to do it. It's never, not yet, at least never going to take the place of a live, everyone get up and go do yeah. something. And we've got a couple of those that we have set up ready to go where it's kind of like a game, like Clue and stuff like that, where you go through some stuff, but, that's at least how we're trying to make it a little bit more engaging and fun.
I love that. I do love that. And thank you for explaining that. Cause we have an LMS here, and so I know exactly what you're talking about, but, I've taken through other people some online courses where it was read and answer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I almost fall asleep, but the ones where you got to click to move forward or go back and forth or check or mm-hmm. move stuff around, I remember everything that I did.
Yeah.
Like it's so good. So anyway.
Yeah. If you can link an emotion, mm-hmm. it very much is like storytelling. Mm-hmm. So if you can link an emotion to what you're learning, that's when you have that retention. So it's like, if you think about like movies, like you remember every element of a movie mm-hmm. because you're invested in that character, you're invested in that story arc. And so you create the same kind of thing within training and you'll get that same result. So
I like that analogy. That's excellent. Okay. So we're going to move on to some fun questions.
Okay.
And, just answer quick. It doesn't matter. You can't get it right or wrong. I mean, there's no.
I don't know. We don't know each other that well yet. I guarantee you, I can get it wrong.
No, I'm pretty sure you can't. So, what is your favorite pastime or hobby?
Ooh, right now it would be no money, catching up on Netflix, money, traveling.
I love it.
Depends on the year.
That was good. Okay. What's the best compliment you've ever received?
Ooh. God, this is hard. So because most of my stuff is self-deprecating. It really is. That I am a loyal and true friend.
That's an amazing compliment because these days that is extremely hard to find.
And that's, ain't that the truth?
It really is. Okay, so what's your biggest pet peeve?
Arrogance.
Yeah,
I hate people that are arrogant. Like, get over yourself, literally.
Yeah, I get that one. Okay, if you could have any animal in the world, what would it be and why?
Oh, no.
There's no limitations. Whatever animal you want.
Money, no money. Okay, so I do love sloths, mm-hmm. and I actually have a tree at the sloth sanctuary because I donated money to them. So I'd have to say a sloth.
They're very sweet. They're very so slow, cute. But they are cute.
So am I.
Okay. If you could try or do any job in the world without having to worry about education or anything in that or like that, what would you want to try?
How long do I have?
What do you mean?
To
try it?
Like how long am I in the role? Like,
I don't know.
This is my neurodivergent brain. I'm like, I need details here.
So 6 months.
Oh, president. president. Absolutely.
Okay.
Give me 6 months.
Okay.
We'll all be good.
So if you could master any language instantly, what would it be?
Ooh, I would have to say Spanish because I did. Okay, so I have a funny story about this, and my friend is going to kill me for saying this, but I have to mention it. So I'm Lithuanian, so I do speak Lithuanian already. So I'm bilingual.
Okay.
But I tried to take Spanish because everyone took Spanish. And this was in college. And my friend is from Ecuador. And she's like, Erica, I will help you learn Spanish. And I'm like, awesome. So she tried to tutor me. And by tutor, I mean, we went to a Mexican restaurant and had margaritas. So then came test time. And she's like, oh, I'm going to help you. It's going to be no problem. And we sat down to take the test. And she's like, I don't know any of this. And I'm like, ma'am, you said you knew this. So that was my only D minus in college. And I don't know Spanish and I blame her. So every time it comes up, and now she has a daughter that's 15 and she's learning Spanish. And I'm like, oh, don't ask your mom. Cause yeah. You know, I got a D minus from her. And she's like, no, it's because you didn't try. So yeah,
that's funny.
It'd probably be Spanish.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Gio. I'm going to send this to her.
Okay. What, as we kind of come to a close here, what direction do you, I mean, I know you just started. Your business is still in the brand new kind of infancy stages. You're getting your feet under you. But what direction do you think the next leg of your journey will take you on? Maybe personally, if you want to go there, and or professionally?
So I always saw the company continue to be digital, or, you know, fully digital, so that we could be nomads. I'd actually love to spend some time living in different countries.
Nice.
And that's a goal of ours over the next couple of years. I'd love to continue. So we've been working primarily with businesses over the last year and a half or so. We are now working on our own catalog of courses that will be offered. So the goal is to get that built out, not only for the insurance space, but outside as well, and just create really fun, engaging courses that when people see them, they won't go, oh my God, I have to take this course, this sucks. But actually be excited about it. Be able to learn some really good information, have some fun doing it. So that's where I see us over the next couple of years, growing and, possibly relocating.
Well, I think that is a great goal because, I mean, I work in this and train and things, mm-hmm. but I see a great need for it. And honestly, I can see where it would be easier, yes, but I can see where it would, for a company, where it would be long-term, more beneficial financially and all around to lease, so to speak, the mm-hmm. general courses. If they needed yeah. something specific for them, fine, but to do mm-hmm. it through someone else who is constantly updating and managing the overhead and mm-hmm. all that, and they just, here's my subscription or whatever fee. And I think that is a fantastic goal, and I think you yeah. are going to do exceptionally well with that because there is Thank a huge you. Need.
Yeah. And that's kind of the goal. Like if we can do like an 80-20 where it's like 80% general, because at the end of the day, a claim's a claim. And so, right. and regardless of what, you know, organization you work for, a lot of it's the same thing.
It really
comes down to client expectations, client specific, and how does my organization work? How can I align your skills to my organization? Mm-hmm. And if you can get that through to the adjuster day one, you're saving money on QA, you're saving money on, you know, your managers having to tell the same thing over and over again, mm-hmm. you're reducing all of those calls. So there's definitely benefits to
there really
getting
is.
That out there quickly.
Oh yes, I agree completely. So do you have any final remarks for anybody watching or listening? The one takeaway you would love for people to get from this, if they got nothing else.
I mean, the biggest thing, just, I think I'll just go back to, you know, you are smarter, more capable, better than you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I will, you know, having now had multiple meetings with a lot of organizations, a lot of people in C-suite, I can tell you, you are smarter and more capable than you think you are. You know, so keep doing what you're doing. If you want to pursue something, pursue it. And don't let any insecurity or anything stop you from doing that. Because I think that's the biggest driver of failure, is that insecurity to start. And also, don't be afraid of failure, because you learn so much from your mistakes.
Don't
so,
you though?
you're gonna fall. One of the best things that I saw on the internet is, like, your first podcast is gonna suck. Your first, my first training program sucked. My first pitch was terrible. But you get better, mm-hmm. and so just keep doing it.
You do get better.
Work through it, and you'll be successful and get to where you need to go.
I agree. Well, Erica, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And I do love what you said about follow your gut and to not doubt yourself. That's amazing. And I completely agree. It is a big one.
Yeah.
And I thank you all for joining us on another episode of Connecting Women in Insurance. And I will see you all again next time.